everyone. I'm Ami Parbu, Managing Partner of Axion Venture Lab, and I'm excited to welcome you back for another season of FinTech for the People. On this podcast, we talk to leaders at the frontier of FinTech, specifically those innovating for the 2 billion underserved small businesses and consumers around the world. As a quick introduction, Axion works to build a more inclusive world with access to economic opportunity for everyone. We at Axion Venture Lab believe in the power of fintech to reach those that have been left behind. As an early stage investor in fintech startups, over the last decade, we've invested in nearly 70 companies across Africa, Latin America, Asia, and the United States. This season, we'll be diving into one of the hottest topics in tech, artificial intelligence. Applications of AI are by no means new to financial services. We've seen over the years how machine learning in particular has changed the way fintech companies consume and process data. Ultimately, these AI applications have been more predictive in nature, as in they were built on models that analyze data, mostly based on parameters defined and adjusted by humans, and all of that helps to make recommendations and come to certain conclusions. Now, with generative AI, we're on the cusp of a new frontier that could automate traditional AI approaches. With Gen AI, the tech can now write the code to build a model, generate new data to be used, and based on the output of the model, make conclusions in an almost human-like manner. We at Axion Venture Lab, like everyone in tech, have been learning a ton about generative AI, and we've been having lots of passionate debates around what we believe these newer applications of AI could mean and how it could fundamentally change the way fintech companies operate, as well as how they engage with and even potentially personalize offerings to underserved customers. Ultimately, there's no question in our minds that there's huge promise for where this new frontier of AI could take financial inclusion. AI can streamline processes such as automated customer service in local languages. It could create hand-holding to help assist customers during onboarding, making all of this much more accessible to underserved populations. AI algorithms can also set the standard in processing large amounts of data, which could create more accurate risk assessments for harder to reach customers, ultimately translating to greater credit penetration. So there's all of these incredible use cases for financial inclusion. However, AI in frontier markets is still in the early days. Entrepreneurs are trying to figure out how to get started, what investments to make in this new technology. And similarly, investors, regulators, researchers are all on the edge of their seats to identify risks and ensure ethical implementation of AI, especially for underserved customers. This season, we want to take a look at the promising use cases as well as the challenges around implementing AI in inclusive fintech. We'll start in this first episode by speaking with investors to identify broader trends and applications for AI in fintech. In the second episode, we'll speak to four founders who've all successfully implemented AI in their businesses. And lastly, at this inflection point, it's important that we talk about equity around AI and our roles in ensuring ethical implementation. With that context, I'm excited to get to our first conversation. We're thrilled to have Ximena Pardo and Federico Antony, managing partners of Hi Ventures. Hi Ventures is a Mexican venture capital fund that has been investing in Latin American startups for over a decade. Ximena and Federico launched their newest AI-focused fund last year, and I'm excited to have them share more on the opportunities they see for AI in emerging markets. Thank you so much, Federico and Ximena, for joining us today.
Thank you. We're very happy to be here.
Well, I'd love to start by just hearing a bit more about your journey. You all have been investing in tech in Latin America for the last 12 years. And last year, Hi Ventures announced the new AI-focused fund.
Of course. And thank you for the opportunity. Truth be said, it's a beautiful story that it began almost 10 years ago when I met Federico, actually in a family brunch on a weekend. And I met him and he convinced me to become an entrepreneur, that sometimes, and specifically in our region, back then, you needed that push. You needed somebody to help you make that decision. And he was the one who did it. So he not only convinced me, he actually gave me the first check, which was Hi Ventures' first check. So we both launched it together. I launched a car sharing company, which was called Carrot, that aimed to solve the mobility problems of Latin America in cities like Mexico City, Buenos Aires, Bogotá. And Federico launched Hive Ventures in order to start an ecosystem in a region. I operated Carrot for 6 years with the highs and lows of being an entrepreneur, with all the headwinds from back then, from a not very digitalized region, etc. And Hive Ventures launched a fund to help the founders from the region try to solve these huge needs through technology. At the end, Carrot was not the success we expected, as many of the companies that launched that vintage. But nevertheless, it provided us with, or at least me, with some experience and some talent for the region. I then went back to the corporate side. I'd worked at Meta as a product manager, where I was able to see how the ecosystem evolved digitally and how it has changed in the last 10 years, probably. I did some launches in there for the biggest product company in the world. But truth is, I wanted to come back. And since Federico had become my mentor and my friend, I wanted to come back home. And that's how I ended here. But I'll let him talk about the fund story.
Yeah, so basically, this is a story about an investor and an entrepreneur that had partnered 12 years ago, partner again. So we are, Hive Ventures is now a firm that is run by an entrepreneur and an investor, which we think is a great perspective for founders. And we have a very big bias for product and technology, which is what explains why we're here, Emmy, to talk about what we see in terms of AI and the big impact of AI. But our origin story is one that you see in a lot of teams that start somewhere, try again and try again, and then finally, they find a huge opportunity to go after, which we think is AI for us.
Tell us about that. So tell us about that journey from broad focus on tech and product, these larger innovations, to why now? How did you find yourself now with this new fund focused on AI?
It happened early last year, 2022. You remember ChatGPT launched in November 2022 and early 2023, to be exact, went to Stanford to a class at the GSB there. Scott Brady was giving a talk about AI, and we were both super impressed. Not only about the possibilities of the applications of AI, but we were impressed about how much everybody was taken aback by the fast evolution that was marked by ChatGPT in terms of how intelligent ChatGPT had gotten, how fast it had gotten that intelligent, and how everybody in the Valley, in the most advanced ecosystem in the world, were surprised and excited and nervous and scared about the possibilities. And that was enough for us to really come back to Mexico, talk to our entrepreneurs, talk to the most talented people we could talk to, and really realize that the future for tech in emerging markets is going to be all about AI. And what is really striking about the opportunity is that we realized very quickly, that's early 2023, we realized very quickly the founders in Buenos Aires, the founders in Istanbul, the founders in Jakarta, were basically starting to think about the possibilities of this technology at the same time as the founders in much more advanced ecosystem. And not only were they thinking about it at the same time, they had access to the same APIs, the same technologies, the same talent. And that is really unique. It is the first time that a technology shift happens and offers the same opportunities to entrepreneurs across the world. If you think, for instance, Ami, about the internet revolution, in the late 90s, access to internet, access to broadband took years in developing economies. Years. It was impossible to develop products as they were developing in more developed economies. When you think about smartphones, the smartphone revolution, years in developing economies for smartphones to reach meaningful population, to reach the base of the pyramid. Now, today, we take it for granted, but it was very slow. In the case of AI and Gen AI, it has been immediate. We have the same opportunities, the same access to technology, the same access to talent today. So the possibilities of having teams in developing economies, wherever they're from, developing and solving problems at scale today are really, really compelling. And that's why Jimena and I are so excited about the AI opportunity.
It's so interesting you talk about that because, you know, one of the questions or one of the things you see in general is that the money going to AI startups is largely in those developed markets. There isn't yet as much of that money going into emerging markets. What case would you make to that investor sitting in San Francisco to be looking outside and into the markets that you guys and we work in? Why will that next big AI company be built in Latin America or Turkey or wherever, as opposed to in San Francisco?
So it's not only that companies are having the same resources at the same time for the very first time, as Federico mentioned, but also there are some unique opportunities because of the nuances of the region that provides us with this advantage on AI. We've seen two different roles today in Latin America that actually relate to the rest of the world. One is the presence of large and structured, unstructured pools of data. So if you come to think about the US, data is available, it's open, and it's being leveraged now for a while. But in regions like in Latin America and sometimes the Southeast Asia, etc., the amount of data is really not ordered yet. And it's really, it hasn't been unlocked. So there is a huge opportunity where big companies and also small companies can leverage on that. We've heard this before, that whomever owns the data will have the right to win with AI. So guess what? Latin America and these regions have a humongous amount of data waiting to be unleashed. The second road we've seen, it's about conversational UIs. So one thing I've learned in my Meta experience and what I've seen is that all of the developing world, half of them joined the internet through WhatsApp and through a conversational platform. And this was in maybe 5 to 10 years ago. So to be able to connect these unsophisticated tech people with the humongous power of AI and literally place them at the tip of their fingertips, at the end of their fingertips, I mean, that just makes it amazing. Just to imagine what can be built in these conversational platforms and who can be able to use it and access all those services through it is just inspiring for us. And we've seen already some companies trying to build that. And they're starting and iterating to get the services adopted this way.
And more broadly, in terms of fintech, the access to financial services in a region, and that's the case of other developing economies, is still lagging. So there are still the opportunities that we all know of in all our countries. But now you have a technology that can make access to products at a price that wasn't possible before, that can help with financial education as it was impossible before. So there are so many possibilities in a market that is still full of low-hanging fruit, as they call it. So for investors out there, focusing solely on developed markets is a bad idea. They should learn from what they learn, exposing capital outside of the US and the main markets. And now it's the right time because now the talent is ready, the tech is there, and the opportunities are still in front of us.
So with that, I'd love to turn to fintech. Obviously, that's what we care about here. So, you know, last year, you all, High Ventures, put out a great report called Fintech Disrupted. And one of the things that you lay out is that AI is both not at all new to fintech, right? I mean, predictive powers of AI, machine learning, you know, they've been used for years. Credit underwriting, fraud detection, and more. But you also make a very compelling case around now is also the moment, as you've just said, Federico, given generative AI. So can you all share with our listeners what's really changed in 2022, 2023 that makes these opportunities in fintech more real and achievable now? And tell us more about what those opportunities look like.
So I think the best way to describe those opportunities is to talk about cases that we're seeing on the ground. One that we really like is a company, a portfolio company called Fintual. So Fintual has been operating since 2018 in Chile, launched Mexico, enrolled not only Hive Ventures, but also Sequoia and Kazekh. And they've been working and dominating really the mutual fund market. So they've basically provide access to families across Latin America to invest in funds, in mutual funds, and that in with a interface that is amazing. So very recently, when they saw the opportunity of doing something that they were unable to do before, which is educate, provide financial advice at scale, which is something that exists in the world for decades now. So you can find financial advice in any country in the world if you have the money to pay for it, right? And in order to have the money to pay for that financial advice, you need to have a lot of money to invest. If you go for small accounts, which is the case of Fintel, until today, it was impossible to provide the kind of financial advice that banks provide. So with generative AI, Fintual launched a co-pilot that is basically helping its customers and potential customers set financial goals, understand how the economy works, how the economy affects assets, what's the right strategy for passive investment, when is a good idea to have some active investments exposure. And they're doing that leveraging not only OpenAI, but other platforms. That evolution basically provided them with new possibilities and more competitive advantage in order to compete with the large players. So we really like Fintual because it is one thing that we're seeing, which is amazing, is that this change in technology is not only going to be good for the super large players and the super large tech companies or the new companies that are launched today, but it's also great for the startups that have been leaning in a problem, that have teams, that have distribution channels, that have a brand, and they can lean into that. And that is something that's really exciting.
To compliment Federico on that, we see in one hand, fintechs that are building with AI. This is basically now table stakes for every fintech. So if there's an entrepreneur today listening to us, wherever they are, they should be building with AI. They should be building with co-pilots. They should be doing personalized consumer finance, et cetera, et cetera. And in the other hand, we do have the product, how it has improved with generative AI. Not only Fintual is a great example, but actually to be able to deliver the right service in the right time to the correct people, it's super important in finance. And by delivering to the right client, it's also addressing the greatest issues why people have been underserved financially in the world. And I think that's a huge generative AI opportunity to be able to avoid that biases and avoid that and mitigate those prejudgments, et cetera.
Are there other use cases on that product side, Jimenez, you're talking about that you all are seeing or a frame you're taking as investors to say, these are the opportunities we want to find, we want to invest in? I like that kind of, there's the product lens, there's the streamlining operations. Sort of how do you frame the many, many different use cases of building with AI and using AI in fintech?
Well, that is an amazing question. And we've been obsessed about it for a while now. And trying to build these frameworks has been hard because it's changing so quickly. And I know you know this from firsthand. So today what we're seeing is, well, what we consider to be the basics and the basics of AI and what's being built on top and the applications and layers that have these unique advantages for a region in order to create moats against like a global competitor, and how can these local founders can actually find the right data that will actually bring this barrier to any incumbent, etc. This has been a huge discussion, internal discussions around this topic. Today, we do have frameworks where we evaluate the different applications of AI according to the task they solve and the complexity of them. So we see some simple tasks being solved. And this is some task that may not even need to be solved with AI. They can even be solved with some other structure. So let's say some classification or some data filtering or generating simple tasks, etc., or executing basic commands. It can also be done like with a decision tree or some other structures. That is the first layer that we've seen. The second one, it comes in an intermediate use, and perhaps this will need some basic resources from generative AI. And this is mostly machine translation, for example, or an anomaly detection among like humongous pools of data, or maybe the algorithm needs to make a decision, like in a financial trading, like Fintual, or maybe we've seen this on maps, trying to figure out which is the best way and the best navigation way and take those decisions made. Then perhaps creating simple generation of text, and lastly, make some easy recommendations to the users. And then what we dream of, it's a little bit of more complex tasks. And what we've seen is that these people and these teams and these founders that are actually creating today these intermediate uses of generative AI are dreaming and have the visions to get into a higher complexity solving problems. And these are the ones that are able to do some multi-step processes altogether. For example, in Fintual, the financial copilot actually are 7 different copilots that for the users act just like one. And one specializes in risk, maybe some other in some planification, etc., etc., and they act like one. And then what excites us the most is like the digital robots, those agents that will be able to solve in a conversation many difficult tasks outside that conversation and actually solve real problems, not only like doing an onboarding, but actually getting the files of that onboarding. And we do believe that is the future. And then last but not least is like personalized learning systems that will take the decision for you almost completely.
Yeah, so if you think of some examples, one of the barriers for adoption of financial services in emerging markets is related to education, right? So not only do you need to understand why, for example, an insurance, a life insurance is something that you should think about having for your family, or an insurance for your property, insurance for your business is something that is important. Not only do you need to understand that, and that can be solved again by this very intelligent chatbots that are now available, but it's also difficult just to get the information and everything that you need to, all your documents that you need for an insurance company to underwrite the risk. And what we're seeing, and what Jimena was mentioning today, is that there is a technology that will soon be available, and that will soon be have some applications out there that will be a robot that will go out and get the documentation from the government agency automatically. And they will not only get the documentation, but they will retrieve the data in order to submit the correct information in the application. So everything is going to be easier for the consumer. So someone in a poor village in Peru or in a poor village in Brazil, in the Amazonas, we will be able to apply for insurance, get the benefits of insurance. And then once they have a problem, they will have an agent that will help them get the money from the insurance, right? So we believe that some of the barriers that financial adoption saw in the region will actually come down with the applications of these technologies.
Definitely from a from an efficiency, the operation. I mean, we see time and again in emerging markets, the cost to serve often harder to reach customers with, you know, limited data in one place, make it very costly. And that leads to why there's not access, the same access for them. Companies don't even want to serve them.
Absolutely. Think about microcredit, for example. Microcredit interest rates are high, not so much because of the risk of lending to this population, but just for the sheer cost of serving it, for the sheer cost of serving these loans. You need structures, you need physical places, you need to sign contracts, and all of that will go down. And with that, the need of charging so large interest rates, which in turn will mean more access to loans at the base of the pyramid.
One of the questions, though, we have as a fund, and I'm curious your take on this, is on that kind of the initial steps with a customer. You used insurance as an example. Insurance is a product that does require a lot of education. It requires a sale, really, to have a customer buy that product, to understand what that life insurance policy would involve. We've traditionally seen that a human is really valuable there. Having that human agent to help build trust, to help onboard, answer those questions feels the most difficult to, you know, replace with AI. Completely agree on streamlining documentation, streamlining renewal. How do you think about that early stage of the process? And what is that? What do you envision the continued role of a human as it relates to financial services as an agent continuing to be as we see more and more AI play a role?
That's a great question. We believe that humans need to be in the loop for sure. It is one of the most important aspects of financial inclusions. What is fascinating to see, Amy, is how empathic chatbots are. So if you go out and chat with a chatbot, we have, for instance, we're lucky to be investors in a company called Yana that offers mental health services to consumers. And it's amazing how empathic Yana is. I mean, when you chat with this AI, you really feel someone at the other end that understands your problem, that wants your well-being, and it's really powerful. So I'm not saying that humans are going to be replaced, but it's still provoking to see how well these robots work. There's another company that is interesting as well that is leveraging AI very much. That is Atlas. Atlas is a benefits platform launched in Argentina by three engineers, three female engineers, amazing team. And they're basically thinking about solving the problems for a global workforce. And a global workforce that has a footprint all over the world. So imagine people, engineers that work in India or engineers that work in Ukraine or in Argentina. And they're basically providing a platform for them to have access to benefits that are competitive to the benefits that engineers in developed economies are getting. And the way they are thinking about and managing their products or their product vision is that they want to replace an HR manager in the companies they serve. So they are building the technology with chatbots and agents and digital interfaces that we will be able to replace an HR manager that otherwise would have been needed in an SME in Mexico or an SME in the US. They have now that technology and that aspiration. So in a way, we will be able to see startups replace humans so that companies can work and focus on their core value proposition, on their core value problems, and on having successful businesses, instead of focusing on workflows that are predictable and repetitive and don't bring value to the SME and therefore the entrepreneurs behind it. So that's another example of things that are exciting.
Yeah, the workflow optimization, focusing on the core use cases are incredibly exciting, in addition to the customer-facing ones, as you've talked about, which may take more time, but you know, I think are there. So I'd love to focus on another use case, which is very exciting for us. I mean, like you all, as fintech investors, we've done quite a lot around lending and credit. And AI, machine learning in credit underwriting has been happening for a very long time. How do you think about what's exciting leveraging AI in lending?
There's a few things that really interest us. One of them is, can you create credit scoring agents with very little information? And that's a fascinating possibility. So obviously banks and incumbents have a huge advantage with startups in the lending space because they have so much more data and historical information. With generative AI, you can actually train models with much more fewer information, and you basically create synthetic information in order to train the models. So we're excited about the opportunities of building very, very efficient credit scoring engines with record amount of small information, with very, very little information. So that's one thing that's exciting to us. The other thing is related to collections, right? So one of the things that startups have historically been terrible at in emerging markets is collections. They're very good at origination, but terrible at collections. And if you have agents that are super efficient in the collection process, that is going to be definitely very helpful for startups. So we're seeing startups that are starting their lending platform, not only thinking about origination, but also thinking about collections and about the potential of having multiple agents helping the workflow of the collections workflow.
One other use case I'd love to touch on is fraud detection. And this is something where in many ways, as AI gets better to detect fraud, fraudsters are going to get better at committing fraud. And so how do you think about, you know, the power of AI? And again, you know, the leapfrog that Gen AI is bringing over the traditional predictive AI that already exists in fraud detections. How do you think about the opportunities today in the region?
Yes, great question. And one of the biggest use cases, again, for fintech. And definitely, I mean, if AI is all about data and the pools of data, this anomaly detection and to be able to identify unusual patterns, it's one of the key elements. And as Federico mentioned, with generative AI, you can do it with less data available. And not only that, you can use it also to prevent that these anomalies might be underscoring somebody who shouldn't be underscored. It can be more precise. And once you do it, then for a region where, I mean, so many people is being underserved because of that, it just helps us provide a better service to those who actually need it and who deserve it.
Any advice, any guidance for those fintech entrepreneurs who are building today? Or how should an entrepreneur think about actually leveraging AI in their businesses and their companies? What do you look for?
Definitely, all startups need to be building with AI, be it for their internal processes of coding, marketing, and managing their organizations to the way they deliver and communicate their value proposition. What I think is important, and what we've come a long way from our first obsession with the topic, is that fundamentals, is that the what was true before AI in terms of business fundamentals, solving problems, thinking about modes, thinking about scalability, think about speed versus incumbents. Everything that was true before this new generation of AI tools and technologies is true today. So entrepreneurs need to focus on the basics. What problem am I solving? Why is this problem important? How am I going to charge? How am I going to scale? Why what I'm doing is important and relevant and won't be replicated by an incumbent. Same questions, same fundamentals. That is something that it took us a few months to realize, but we're now back to that.
Just to complement on that, and totally agree, definitely every fintech needs to be building with AI as table stakes, period, anywhere in the world. I will encourage the founders and those building to try to solve the unsolvable with this new technology. We don't need another wallet built being built with AI. What we need is the unsolvable to reach the people that we haven't been able to reach, to try to give a perfect scoring to whomever actually needs a good scoring. So either try to build whatever it's being unsolved, or try to build whatever it's being solved, but 10x better. And that doesn't mean to be used with artificial intelligence, which what it means is that it needs to be better for the user and better for whomever it's serving. It doesn't, generative AI or AI is just being a tool. Try to solve the unsolvable or do it 10 times better.
That's a great frame for entrepreneurs listening, right? AI is the tool, but what is it that you're solving with that tool? And how are you thinking about that? Well, last question for you all. It wouldn't be a complete conversation on AI if we didn't talk about potential risks of implementing AI. And you see this in the news with, you know, what's going on in with Google Gemini and different tools, whether it's around data privacy in our use cases, when you think about reducing biases, risks can be exacerbated, particularly in a context with underserved or underrepresented customers. What risks do you all as a fund think about in this space? And how do you in particular diligence evaluate around those?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're pretty optimistic here at High Ventures in terms of models evolving to become better and better at avoiding those biases. We believe that there are enough resources, be them financial or human, for that matter, to solve for those early biases that we saw in the models. We think that the Gemini fiasco is just part of the process of getting it right in terms of avoiding those biases. What we're really worried about is more related to the institutions in our countries. So by definition, developing economies have weaker institutions. And we believe that the risks are more on the public space, on how generative AI and AI will challenge democratic institutions, will challenge the social fabric, rather than seeing things that won't be solvable in the private space. So I think that it is going to be very important everybody to join the conversation and to continue to be on the alert in terms of those negative impacts. But in terms of biases for credit scoring, biases for delivering services to underrepresented, underserved populations, we think there are enough models out there, enough competition, enough resources to get that right.
Are there any things you as investors are doing from a governance perspective or otherwise to help your companies? Because it's a learning process. As these models develop and get better, you know, the companies will get better. But how should we all as investors be supporting our companies to develop without those biases and risks in place?
Yes. So we've been very intentional on learning best practices in order to avoid this. So in one hand, we seek for a lot of help from those who actually are expertise on this. For example, we are trying to get the 2X certification in the 2X challenge, which helps you avoid these biases. And we, from our LPs, our more institutional LPs who have dedicated teams on these matters, We reach out to them in order to get all the information and best practices. We understand that this is not the core of our business. So that's why we're trying to learn from those who actually have been studying about this and know how to implement them correctly. That's one side, like trying to get the true best practices and to our fund. And once we have this knowledge, there are so many ways that we're trying to implement them with our portfolio companies. One of them is just by keeping the score and keeping the metrics, which is very important for us, and trying to report those. I mean, at the end, you need to have this metric to understand if you're moving it forward, right? The second one is trying to provide them with the correct information to. Sometimes we do this through town halls. Sometimes we do it in our own one-on-ones with the founders, etc. And the third one is that we also seek to understand the founders from the founders' perspective. Sometimes our founders know better how to implement this than we do it. So we try to get this synergy from them and to also have this forward to other companies. These are the two approaches we have. Of course, we seek to invest with people that we think they have the same ethics as we do and the same goals. And of course, the other thing is Federico and I are very motivated by this. So I think when you see the two managing partners investing time in these matters, this goes out to our LPs, this goes out to our founders, this goes out to the community. At the end, that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you both for all of your thoughts here. Obviously, a fast-moving space thinking about AI and fintech, and incredibly exciting to see you all at the forefront and helping kind of move this industry forward in a critical region like Latin America.
No, thank you. This has been fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're excited to see what folks are going to be building in the next decade. And by the way, thankful that Acción, as always, takes a leading role in helping us move forward and have great conversations around important topics such as this one. So thank you so much, Ami.
Thank you for joining us for this first episode of our new season on AI and FinTech for Inclusion. Join us next week when we dive more into the use cases of AI and FinTech. We'll be speaking with four founders on how they have been leveraging AI to reach underserved customers across Africa, Latin America, and Asia.